WILL 580 AM and 90.9 FM, HD3 Urbana.
Greetings, it's 1 o'clock, time to jump here in WILL AM 580. I'm Bob McChesney, and this is Media Matters coming to you live today. Press censorship is something that's generally done by bad countries, dictatorships, authoritarian regimes. Our guest today will talk about the notion of censorship for American media, not just this year, but for quite some time. Should be a terrific show with the directors of the Project Censored Project here on Media Matters. But before we go to our guests, let's go to Media Minutes.
Any views or opinions expressed by the hosts of Media Minutes are their own and do not necessarily reflect those of this station, its management, or licensee.
Welcome to Media Minutes. I'm Stevie Converse.
And I'm Candace Clement.
And I'm Megan Tatey. The Federal Communications Commission is considering new rules that would give viewers more information about how broadcasters use the public airwaves. Broadcasters are obligated to keep public files that provide essential details on how they operate. The rule change would require broadcasters to post these files online in a searchable database. The proposal would also require broadcasters to provide much more information about the nature of their programming. For example, they would need to document how much public interest programming they produce. Broadcasters are resisting the change, but many public interest advocates are in favor. The FCC's public comment period ended this week. The Public Interest Public Airwaves Coalition, which includes Free Press, submitted four petitions totaling 68,000 signatures to the FCC in support of the rule change. Cheryl Lianza represents the United Church of Christ, a member of the coalition. She said the new rules would make broadcasters more accountable and transparent, which is particularly important during an election season.
Viewers will be able to find out easily with a few clicks of a mouse online who is buying political advertising. And they'll even be able to find out a little bit of information about these new super PACs that have been propagated by the recent Supreme Court Citizen United decision.
Lianza said that many people forget that broadcasters use the public airwaves for free. In exchange, they are supposed to produce programming that fits the needs of each community. Tracking whether this happens hasn't been easy, but the new rules could change this too.
For example, if you're a local advocate and you're interested in what the mayor is doing to help combat crime in your city, you may want to see, well, what are television broadcasters doing about that? How can we make sure that the public is getting the right information or that the debate is balanced? When the FCC's new rules come into play, you will be able to go online and look and see a segment-by-segment breakdown of how much time your local broadcaster spends on local civic affairs. Right now, you would have no idea how much time your local TV station spend covering the mayor or any other local official. After this, you will be able to track that with a lot more accuracy.
The rules would also require broadcasters to disclose sponsored segments produced by advertisers, allowing viewers to distinguish between fake news and actual reporting. And the rules would also reveal whether stations are engaged in covert consolidation, an increasingly common practice in which stations merge operations and air the same newscasts on multiple stations. To find out more, visit savethenews.org/consolidation.
TV viewers in key election battleground states are subjected to as many as 12 political ads an hour on their local TV stations. And the ads will only increase in frequency as Election Day 2012 nears. But how much actual election coverage exists to cut through the misinformation in attack ads and explain political issues in detail? This election cycle promises to be the most lucrative ever for broadcasters. Thanks to the Supreme Court's Citizens United decision, a flood of political dollars is coming from corporations and wealthy individuals. Up to $3.3 billion will flow into broadcaster coffers.
On the one hand, you have broadcasters profiting immensely from the sale of ad space to these political action committees. And then on the other side, they're not actually doing the type of reporting that would separate fact from fiction and allow voters to make smart decisions when they go to the polls in November.
Free Press Senior Strategy Director Tim Carr has written a new report that explores the dependency between those who control political power and those who control the airwaves. Carr takes a close look at how Citizens United has given the 1% even more power to pick and choose our nation's leaders, leaving voters on the receiving end of countless ads designed to misinform. The report recommends shoring up quality election reporting and limiting media consolidation to ensure more reporters are on the political beat. Carr also says broadcasters should be required to disclose who bankrolls political ads. Carr is calling for the Federal Communications Commission to strengthen disclosure rules so that sponsors of the ads would be listed not only in the broadcaster's political files, but in the body of the ads themselves. And Carr wants something else.
That those ads also disclose not just the name of the innocuous organization, but the four principal funders who support that organization. That will tell viewers a lot more about the true intentions of the advertisers in ways that will hopefully make them better informed when they actually make decisions about the issue at hand.
Carr says there are a lot of organizations doing exceptional work trying to reverse the effects of Citizens United. Forcing disclosure in the media is a good way to mitigate some of the ruling's harmful effects. For more information and to read Carr's paper, go to freepress.net/democracy. You've been listening to Media Minutes, a production of Free Press, a national nonpartisan organization working to reform the media. For more information, visit freepress.net.
Okie dokie. Welcome back to Media Matters. I'm your host, Bob McChesney. I'm coming to you live today on WILL AM 580, based in beautiful Urbana, Illinois. Today we're going to be talking with the editors, or one of the editors and former head of the Project Censor Group, about the new book, Censored 2012, that they just published, the source book for the media revolution, is the subtitle, along with the top censored stories in media analysis of 2010 and 2011. Our guest, Mickey Huff, is the current director of Project Censored and an associate professor of history at Diablo Valley College. Also joining us on the phones, Peter Phillips, the longtime former director of Project Censored, who is now emeritus, I guess, in that role. Mickey, Peter, welcome to Media Matters.
Thanks, Bob.
Thanks for having us.
My pleasure. Well, let me start with you, if I can, Peter Phillips. For listeners who might not be familiar with Project Censored, might not be familiar with the annual yearbook that you've been putting out at Project Censored now for 35 years, just tell people what the group is, what the project is, how long it's been around, and what you try to accomplish.
Project Censored's been around for 35, going on 36 years now. And we every year, students research at universities make a list of the most important news stories the corporate media hasn't covered. So that's our annual list. We've been doing that. We now have all those online available at projectcensored.org. This year, for this book, 19 universities participated. There was over 240 students and 105 faculty that were involved. So it's a global effort. We have universities all over the world participating. They post stories year-round, and so like Florida Atlantic University just posted their stories this week.
And every year there's a book that does come out, the Censored volume. This year the book is Censored 2012, just published by Seven Stories Press, and it is an enormous undertaking, 500 pages, chronicling the top 25 most censored stories. And that's just the tip of the iceberg in the book now. The book has long sections of media analysis and criticism and a review of stories from previous years and how they fared subsequently. Mickey Huff, what does it mean when the story is censored? Are these stories that are literally just like the owner of NBC goes into the newsroom, says, don't cover that because a buddy of mine has a stake in the story. I don't want people to know about it. What do we mean by censorship in a country where you don't have the government actually walking in and shooting journalists to cover something they don't like?
Right. That's a great question. It's a great place to start. And our definition of censorship all along has been that it isn't simply the sort of the black hand of government that comes down and wipes the story out, or, as you said, the owner of a particular press outlet that does it. Censorship occurs in a number of other insidious guises, particularly that include framing, that include things like attacking or labeling. Propaganda itself, skewed information, desired to persuade, in essence is a form of censorship, because there is at the root of that communication a desire to deceive or a desire to not get at the entire picture. Or as George Seldes once said, you know, the role of journalism or journalists is to tell the people what's really going on. So censorship is a more complicated issue, and particularly in a society like the United States, where we have the presumption of press freedom, even though, of course, Reporters Without Borders just reported that the United States has now slipped to 47 globally, but very problematic, particularly on the crackdown on Occupy movement and citizen journalism and so forth. But a lot of people just don't really look for it in the United States because they say, well, look, we've got the right, we've got the left, we've got our MSNBC and Fox, and we've got our New York Times and so forth. And so people are led to believe that they are adequately informed. You know, we have our NPRs and PBSs and so forth for the quote-unquote public view. But increasingly, as you know, and many of your listeners likely know, a lot of those places are sources are underwritten, so-called public media, by major corporations. Corporate media essentially is the mouthpiece of the so-called 1%. And at Project Censored, our role has been to deconstruct or uncensor a lot of great independent reporting that's going on in this country that is published, i.e. technically then, it's not that the story's never published, we wouldn't know about it. But again, censorship comes in a number of other guises. And so these are really mostly underreported stories that are fact-checked, that are serious stories, have serious implications for people in the society and the world over, not just in the United States. And we think they deserve a hearing, which is why we put them on our website and put them in our books every year.
And again, folks can go to the website if you want at projectcensored.org and look at the list of the 25 top most censored stories selected by the jury of experts for 2011 and for 2012 and for previous years, going right on back. It's all there at the website. And this idea just occurred to me, if I can, Peter Phillips, I'd like to ask you, I go down the list of 25 stories. We're going to talk about them a bit during the show today. But if you were to make, Peter, off the top of your head, a list of the top 25 most important news stories last year for the United States, how many of the, were there, how many of different stories, how many good stories are covered well by our news media that, that would preclude some of the 25 you've got on the most censored as being important news stories? I mean, is this the entirety of all the good news stories, or are there some stories our mainstream news media do cover well?
Mainstream media covers stories that have emotional content that reinforce the political empire of the United States and NATO worldwide. So there's bombings in Iraq. That's constantly every day there's some bombing somewhere in the world, and we're, which implies that we're needed more than ever to kind of control that. There's a constant barrage of entertainment media, whether it's football stars or celebrities, that keeps us attracted and interesting and giving us something to gossip about. So those kinds of stories are widely covered in the corporate media in the U.S. But stories about the powerful, the most powerful people in the world, and the behind-the-scenes decisions that are made at Davos or the Bohemian Club or wherever the, these kinds of decisions are made in the policy councils of the world, simply are generally not covered. And if they're covered, they're covered very superficially, and you really don't get the full story.
Bob, may I briefly add to that?
Please do, Mickey Huff.
One story that just popped to mind, or two stories actually, where the so-called corporate media did do some reporting, although potentially not do a lot of the behind-the-scenes dot connecting. One was the Bloomberg story about the $29 trillion coming through the Federal Reserve that was kept quiet for several years, twice the GDP of the United States. Talk about bailouts. That's a huge story that was done by Bloomberg Media. And another that comes to mind is one of our stories on the list was sweatshops in China are making your iPods while workers suffer. That was just on the front page of the New York Times. So there are examples where the corporate media, the big media outlets, do cover important stories. The problem is that, I don't want to necessarily say they are anomalous, but I mean, there's a real trend of distortion in the stories. And there, even if stories are reported in the corporate media, there seems to be a follow-up avoidance or a resistance to really continue the narrative of, say, what the $29 trillion bailout in Bloomberg means. What does it mean in long term? So I think that you will see some fact-based and truthful reporting certainly coming out of the corporate media, but I think it really lacks the overall kind of sociological, economic, and political analysis necessary for Americans to understand more clearly what it means and what they can do about it.
Our guest today on Media Matters, Mickey Huff, who you've just been listening to, who's the current director of Project Censored and an associate professor of history at Diablo Valley College. Also on the lines with us from California, Peter Phillips, professor of sociology and the former director of Project Censored, who ran the project, has been a guest in the show many times in the past. And we're here to talk about Project Censored's new book, Censored 2012, The Top Censored Stories in Media Analysis, of the year, and it's published by Seven Stories Press. If you'd like to call in with a question or comment for Mickey Huff or Peter Phillips or both of them, the number here, of course, at WILLAM580, 217-333-9455, 333-9455, or our toll-free line is open at 1-800-222-9455, so call in if you have any questions or comments. The list again, Mickey and Peter, of the top 25 stories, and I want to give people a sort of more tangible feeling for some of the stuff that you've come up with, is a compelling list, and I'd like to talk about a few of the stories on it to give people a sense of really get into what they're missing, in your opinion, in our news diet with the mainstream media. And let's start with number one on the list, which I think is an astounding story, which is that more U.S. soldiers committed suicide than died in combat. Peter, do you want to field that one, or Mickey? I don't care whoever wishes to.
Well, certainly that's our number one story. And what we've found is that for 2 years in a row now, more U.S. soldiers have committed suicide while in the military than actually died in combat in Afghanistan. And what's troubling about this is that, the military has known that this has been a problem for a long time. And, of course, veterans coming out have severe post-traumatic stress problems, health problems, and continue to kill themselves. So something like 18 veterans a day now are committing suicide, which, if you add the numbers up over the past decade, reaches the level of about 50,000 people. So there's a massive number of suicide-related, military-related deaths. And it's partly, and the military, not only have they acknowledged it, because they've started this new psychological program called Comprehensive Soldier Fitness, which is designed to desensitize incoming military personnel to killing and to try to keep them from killing themselves. And unfortunately, this war is so technologically advanced that the killing ratios are like 100 to 1. So one American soldier dying, they'll end up killing 100 people. So the psychological despair that results from that kind of mass slaughter is taking a heavy toll on the American soldiers, and that's certainly a part that is not acknowledged in this story.
How much of the story, Peter, is that the soldiers who are fighting in Iraq and now Afghanistan are doing all these multiple tours that, unlike soldiers, say, in Vietnam, where I think the 11 months was a standard tour for an infantry soldier. These soldiers oftentimes go back 2, 3, 4 times because the government doesn't want to institute a draft or whatever reason it might be. But they're on the ground a lot longer there.
Well, certainly that's a contributing factor. But we've really believed that the nature of the war, the psychological damage that's coming out of this, that being in an occupied country where you don't know who to trust, and it creates such trauma among the military personnel that many are not only killing themselves, but then have been known now to create and perpetuate some severe massacres and just terrible atrocities on the civilian population. So this isn't trench warfare from World War I, where 90% of the people that died were the combatants. Now 90% of the people dying in war are civilians. And that clearly has a huge psychological trauma on the people involved.
Peter, do you know what the suicide statistics have been in the past for, say, Vietnam or World War II compared to deaths in combat?
Not off the top of my head. They've gradually increased over the last 50 years from when they kept records, but I don't know off the top of my head what those were. They're significantly higher now.
And related to what you've done this year in the book, in the Censor 2012 book, Mickey Huff, is you've, instead of just going 1 through 25, you've clustered the stories with a common theme. So there's a bunch of groupings, and all the stories related to the grouping are lumped together. And alongside the soldier suicide, the number one story is the third story, which is that President Obama authorized the international assassination campaign. And you say this is a top censored story, too. Could you explain what it is and why it's top, why it's you regard it as censored?
Well, you know, you could argue that it is less such the case now as being a censored or underreported story, given that Obama actually did use his alleged or interpreted executive powers to kill U.S. citizens in drone attacks in the Middle East. But when this story came around originally, Obama authorized the international assassination campaign. This is essentially an extension from the Bush years of this mass unilateral executive authority. And increasingly, this has been used to narrow, winnow away, or really sort of dig at our civil liberties, particularly the rights of habeas corpus. The rights of due process. And, of course, we've covered stories like that over the years, the Military Commissions Act, the Warner Defense Reauthorization Act. Of course, now we're also looking at NDAA in stories for potential stories for this next round. But this is, again, another story that really goes to the root of really the degeneration of our democratic culture and the increasingly autocratic way and illegal way that American politicians believe they can act in the name of national security. So we think it's a serious story. It's certainly a story that, again, shines a light on the powerful, shows what these policies really do, and also how they seriously conflict with our constitutional principles.
It's ironic. I suspect that if some enemy, if Hugo Chavez had an international assassination program, it would be a front-page story for her until he was eliminated from this planet.
It's an enormous double standard.
Our guest today, who we've just been talking to, Mickey Huff, the head of Project Censored, also on the line with us, Peter Phillips, the former head of Project Censored, professor of sociology at Sonoma State. It's a pleasure to have them both. The phone lines are open, but they are all full. We've got a packed house of phone lines, so let's go to our first caller right now. Line 1, Savoy, you are on the air with Huff and Phillips.
Okay. Good afternoon, gentlemen. My question is, do you think that SOFA and PIPA could be used as a means to censor online journalism since more and more people are getting their journalism, their news and information online? Thank you.
That's a great call. And I don't know, Mickey or Peter, which of you wants to take this, but for the sake of listeners who aren't familiar with SOPA or PIPA, perhaps explain what they are and as you give your answer.
Well, sure. This is Mickey. These are efforts to, under the guise of cracking down on Internet privacy, really are going to be chipping away at the freedom of expression online. Fortunately, at this point, PIPA and SOPA may be slowed down, stopped. They're going to be back around in one guise or another. ACTA is another that's coming around. And you saw, in fact, that even though there were hundreds of thousands of people and petitions and so forth and people saying, no, do not pass these kinds of regulations, do not do these kind of things, that all kind of fell on deaf ears in the Congress. And it wasn't until the voice of big money in the technology sector, in the guise of, say, Google and Wikipedia and some of these other really big sites, had a blackout, shut down their sites kind of thing for the day, that the Congress started to walk away from the bill and walk away from it. So again, it also is another lesson in who calls the shots and whose voices are heard. But absolutely, these are incredibly insidious types of legislation that will seriously erode freedom of expression online.
Now, let's be clear that the SOPA, the Online Piracy Act, is being pushed by Hollywood, by the big media conglomerates that have film and music properties, and that's their primary concern, and that's what was driving that specifically. But there's a whole other range of threats to Internet freedom, and before we go back to the phone lines, Mickey, let's just follow up, because the second story, if I'm not mistaken, the second story in the most censored stories of 2012 is how the U.S. media, military, manipulates social media. And so a lot of the freedom people think they have, they don't quite have necessarily online. Could you explain that?
Well, yeah, and actually there's another story just related to that that's a follow-up, sort of a deja vu for this next book cycle, is the FBI is now saying, well, we're going to start using the social media. We're going to start using it to monitor things that are going on. It's the new COINTELPRO online kind of thing, so to speak. And in this case, the military was creating fake personas or phony accounts online to get people to join or to get, you know, to watch what certain groups or activist groups were doing and so forth. So again, you know, it's a way that they're really using the technology for surveillance to try to monitor people, and I think more importantly, to potentially infiltrate groups and infiltrate groups that are doing things. And as one of our stories in the cycle for this next year also goes and looks at, is a story about how out of the, I don't know what it is, maybe like 14 or 15 so-called interventions in terror acts that have gone on, the FBI was really largely responsible for helping about 12 of them to potentially reach fruition. So that's kind of a backstory on this, where they're so deeply involved in some of the events and so, as provocateurs, that they almost seem to create these types of things as some kind of a political theater to further justify the erosion of civil liberties.
That was Mickey Huff just speaking. He's the head of Project Censored and the editor of the new book, Censored 2012, a source book for the media revolution, just published by Seven Stories Press. Also in the line with us, Peter Phillips, the former head of Project Censored for many years, professor of sociology at Sonoma State University. Let's go back to the phone lines where we have callers waiting patiently. Let's go now to line four, our toll-free line. Indiana, you're on the air with Huff and Phillips.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. I really appreciate the opportunity to hear this topic. I think the work that you're doing is phenomenally important, and I hope you guys have all the success going forward that you want. I'm curious about the ways that these news stories are censored and how that works and who might be interested in these news stories being censored. I assume that every journalist went to journalist school and has ethics and morals, and why would they allow their work to be censored? Can you speak to that?
That's a great question. Peter Phillips,
that's
would you
a,
like to
a
field
really
that
strong,
one?
A strong question that we get asked all the time. And what we're really dealing with is here is we identify news stories that have not been covered in the corporate media. We don't always know why they weren't covered. I mean, we can build theoretical structures as to why. We can talk about self-censorship and conflicts of interest inside of the media, overt censorship inside the boardroom. All of those things occur. Individually, on a particular story, we don't always know. But there's certainly strong tendencies within the corporate media today, particularly post 9/11, to paint a picture of America as bringing freedom to the world, and this is the whole Pentagon propaganda picture, versus the realities of 1,000 military bases and more military spending the rest of the world and a million Iraqis dead in Iraq because we invaded their country, and on and on, and massive environmental damages and everything, you know, in the world with depleted uranium and leftover munitions. So there's a terrible story here that just doesn't get told. And corporate media is so embedded with the American empire today that they don't tell that story, period.
Our guests today on the show, Mickey Huff and Peter Phillips, who you've just been listening to, they're from Project Censored, the new book, Censored 2012, just out with Seven Stories Press. I'm Bob McChesney. This is Media Matters, WILL AM 580. Phone lines are open at 333-9455, the toll-free line, 1-800-222-9455. Let's go back to the phone lines right now to line 2, Champaign. You're on the air with Mickey Huff and Peter Phillips of Project Censored.
Yes, I have two quick questions for the authors. If you want to try to put a political spin on censorship, would you say that most of the censorship is done by the right versus the left? You know, if you want to try to say try to make it seem try to put a ideological view on that. And the second question is whether profitability. It seems like a lot of the mainstream media just seems to have these, the celebrity stories because that's what gets people to watch that or read the newspaper. So, there's very little reporting on real stories. you know, versus because they need to, you know, sell the papers or, you know, get the viewers.
All right. Well, thank you very much, caller. Mickey, are there, you know, is there, are there, just to paraphrase the first part of the caller's question, are there conservative stories or stories that right-wingers would like to see that aren't getting covered that are similarly censored, or is this largely an anti-left bias, would you say?
Well, I mean, it goes, it cuts both ways, and it just really depends on where you're going to focus. Naturally, the corporate media, you know, skews status quo, profitability, commercial ownership. That was the second part of that question, you know, going back to Noam Chomsky, Ben Bagdikian, and so forth, the whole problem of ownership and advertising. So we can certainly see that in commercial media. There's this desire to make money, a desire to protect the status quo, you know, and certainly populist sentiments and so forth are often spun and turned in a way that appears very negative. But there's also, you know, especially, you know, if you look at so-called progressive media outlets, there are certain topics or subjects that are not necessarily covered, or they may not be covered fairly. Whether you look at, you know, Democracy Now! Or the Progressive Magazine or some other of these sort of more left publications, Project Censored and Peter Phillips in particular did a study several years ago on the propaganda model inside the left progressive media. And that, you know, at the other end of it, we discovered that, you know, there are some things that, that won't be discussed or won't be covered by left media for various reasons. So I think you need to take it on a case-by-case basis. But clearly, the systemic problem in the commercial media, the corporate media, skews right.
Peter Phillips, I wanted to ask you, you mentioned earlier, Peter, about MSNBC. And that has been one of the dramatic developments in the last decade, has been that there is, at least in prime time, sort of a liberal alternative now on cable and satellite television to mainstream media and certainly to Fox News. What's your take on MSNBC's liberal programming? Is how much of that is the solution to the problem that you have outlined year after year in Project Censored?
Well, there's parameters of what's acceptable in corporate media, and MSNBC is definitely part of that as well. So there's certainly some liberal presentations on issues of importance. There's certainly stories that Fox is going to cover and MSNBC won't, and vice versa. So we're getting a little broader spin. It's like NPR versus corporate media. There's some, you know, kind of middle-of-the-road understandings of what's going on in the world. What's missing in particular is all of everything to the left of the middle of the road. We get plenty from the right, but we don't get the, you know, a progressive, liberal, left-leaning analysis of what's going on in corporate media or in the world today. So whether the story's about Libya or it's about Syria or it's about the, you know, social unrest in Bahrain, or all these around the world, particularly in terms of the areas where the U.S. is clearly involved and participating, we rarely get a full analysis from either source in those capacities.
This is Media Matters. I'm your host, Bob McChesney. Our guests today, Mickey Huff and Peter Phillips from Project Censored, here to talk about the new book, Censored 2012, which is just published by Seven Stories Press. The phone lines are open at 333-9455. The toll-free line open at 1-800-222-9455. Let's go back to the phone lines to a caller who's been waiting patiently. Champaign County, line 3, you're on the air.
Good afternoon. Thank you. The website was down for a little bit, maintenance mode, but it's up now so people can look at it. It's a very intriguing list, and I see you have a little video with Greg Palast. I don't know if that's about his nuclear power. You have a story on safety of nuclear power, but it's available. Very intriguing. I see you have a radio program, too, which I wish I could wave a wand and get it on our local community station, but that's what it probably would take. But anyway, all preamble. I wanted you to talk about any coverage you've done that sort of gives a lie to humanitarian intervention, pretext for invasions. The only Libya story you have is about depleted uranium in Libya. But I know through the years from a Balkan story that a while back, the only when you Googled Achim Seku, A-G-I-M-C-E-K-U, two of the first 10 stories were Project Censored stories. Now there's a little bit more coverage because you've subsequently been prime minister and defense attaché. hobnobbing with NATO. But he's a real war criminal, but he's our war criminal. And I just wanted the humanitarian pretext for a variety of invasions is an ongoing theme. Even Bush 2, I guess Bush 1 actually used it in Somalia as well. But it all seems to be very much a pretext, and I wondered if you, as a general topic, or maybe if anybody's familiar with this Balkan story that I'm pointing at, anything on that would be good as well. Thanks a lot.
Sure, thank you very much, caller. Mickey, do you want to field that one?
Well, I can field part of the second. Peter's probably better to talk about the Balkan story because we did do some of that years ago. But as far as this humanitarian intervention idea, we deconstruct that pretty much every year in various stories. In fact, the whole propaganda studies truth emergency section in the 2012 book really kind of looks at how that kind of propaganda really masquerades as some kind of sober, balanced analysis. And you see it in the so-called even liberal publications. I use so-called very strongly, like the New York Times. Cheerleading into the war in Iraq, cheerleading into Iran, blatantly lying in essence about that. Unfortunately, in terms of Libya, we even saw that in some of the other media, like Pacifica. There were very few voices on the Pacifica network that were really critical of U.S. intervention in Libya. And the caller mentioned our radio show there Friday mornings on KPFA. Get a little plug in for that. We did cover a lot of different views on that, including views that were highly critical of what was going on with so-called humanitarian intervention, because it's Orwellian doublespeak, and we really, really hope to call that out.
You know, Peter, I'd like to hand it to you now. I think the problem really comes in, especially when the government being overthrown by the so-called humanitarian intervention is a government that's fairly reprehensible. So those who oppose the intervention or seem to be defenders of some dictator, thug, hood. Talk a little bit about that, if you would.
Well, certainly, if it's our dictator, they're complying with our economic, they're doing business with us, so to speak, in a cooperative way, then they're okay. But if they're a dictator such as in Iraq, Gaddafi, who was showing some signs of independence as
Libya,
Noriega,
yeah,
before him,
yeah,
and saying that they wanted to change the monetary system of how oil was sold in Africa and start selling it for gold, that is gets beyond the pale of acceptance, and he's brought down. In fact, it was the same Ambassador Ford, who was in Libya at that time, who is now in Syria. So we're seeing these almost professional U.S. ambassadors that go around from Baghdad to Libya to Syria, fermenting unrest and trying to destabilize and have regime change in those countries. That's ongoing. These are not humanitarian. There's no such thing as a humanitarian war. We made that quite clear during the Balkans War, the bombings of Serbia. This was not a humanitarian intervention, and so much of that what was covered at that time was simply, there were some very seriously censored stories and some serious propaganda like the Rorschach massacre, which never was proven that the Serbs were in any way involved.
Our guest today, Peter Phillips, who you've just been listening to, and Mickey Huff, both connected with Project Censored, the group that puts out censored annual yearbooks on the top most censored stories in the U.S. news media. The newest book, Censored 2012, just published by 7 Stories. We've got a couple callers waiting to talk with our guests. Let's make sure we get to them. There's still time for others to call in at 333-9455. Or the toll-free line, 1-800-222-9455. Let's go now to line one. Urbana, you're on the air.
Hi, thanks. Great work that you all are doing, and I have, enjoyed isn't really the right word, but read a few of your books. I was wondering how your program, your organization, reaches out to people who don't buy books and maybe aren't necessarily going to go searching for to learn about how much we as Americans really don't know about what's going on. And I'll hang up and listen. Thanks.
Well, thank you very much. And Mickey, I think that gets to sort of the quandary that you face with your work. If you're doing criticism of the news media, no matter how good it is, it's probably not going to get a lot of play in the news media.
No, we really haven't. You know, I mean, we're delighted to be on NPR with you. There are a lot of people that do really great work. But again, it almost turns into its own self-contained echo chamber. It's the circular problem. You know, Project Censor, despite the fact that we've been around for 35 years, despite the fact that, you know, everybody from, you know, Ralph Nader to Walter Cronkite and so forth, and I.F. Stone, whatever, people have said, yay, good work, never been reviewed in the New York Times, you know, never been on any major corporate media. What we do is, Peter and I are educators. We teach. And I teach at a really large community college, Diablo Valley College, outside of Berkeley, California. So, and Peter teaches at Sonoma State. So one way we reach out is through students. And we work, you know, we really work with students, help do research, generate media literacy. We do many events in the community, speaking events. We increasingly are online, and we are aware that the book industry is radically changing as we speak. So we are increasingly asking for people, if they can, you can nominate stories, you can contact us through projectcensored.org. We have lists, we have connections on our list and links to other organizations that talk about how people can be more media literate. We have a daily censored blog. We invite people to do writing and research to share. We have an independent news feed source that has more stories in one day on an RSS feed than you're going to see in the New York Times, and they're all from independent sources. So we're working increasingly with many different people that have the same ideas. We have a commons project. We work with Abby Martin of Media Roots and Citizen Journalists. So we're really just doing a confluence of things to try to get the work out there. We don't believe asking the system, asking the sort of overlords of the media structure, if we can participate, is working. The reform efforts, as noble as they've been to try to fix what's wrong with big media in this country, have never technically gotten what they really want. And we're just really busy trying to create the type of system that we, the people, want to have a truly free press, and we appreciate any help and support that we can get.
Peter Phillips, you've been doing the censored work for decades now, at least, 15 years since you've started running it, if I'm not mistaken?
Correct. Yeah.
And I assume you were working somewhat involved before that as well, with Carl Jensen, the founder of Project Censored, back in the 70s. And how is, you know, from your perspective, Peter, how's the lay of the land changed, say, in the last 15 years from when you started? Or has it not changed much at all?
Actually, corporate media is far more consolidated, far more, it's incredibly worse. It's propaganda. We use the term managed news, and that's what we're dealing with today. And we've been saying now for 5 years, using the term truth emergency. And we literally have a truth emergency in the world, that the corporate media is a propaganda top-down 1% voice. And we're not getting a full story about literally about anything in the world. And so independent media, which is out there in a very broad way, and the Internet, allows us, to, at least at this conjuncture in history, to put out independent news stories, validate them at universities, which we've been doing for 35 years, and now we've got universities participating all over the world, and then post these stories. So right now, just posted is the Federal Bureau of Investigation encouraging terrorist activities. Wachovia Bank launders money for the Latin American drug cartel. British Petroleum begins re-drilling in the Gulf of Mexico. Your chickens on your dinner table are genetically modified. I mean, those are the kinds of stories you're not seeing on the front pages of the news or in corporate television in the United States or anywhere else in the world. And so we really believe that there's an important agenda of building grassroots, bottom-up news and information. It's the only way we're going to have a media revolution in this country. We're not going to be able to convince Congress or the corporate media to reform themselves.
Our guest today, Peter Phillips, who you've just been listening to, and Mickey Huff, both from Project Censored. We're talking about the new book, Censored 2012, just published by Seven Stories. The phone lines are still open here at Media Matters at 333-9455 or toll-free 1-800-222-9455. We've got a couple more callers. I'm going to get to you right away. Let's start with line four, Terre Haute, Indiana. You're on the air with our Project Censored friends.
Hi. Regarding, I'd call this suppression of the news rather than censorship. In the 70s, when we were involved in overthrowing Salvador Allende in Chile, I heard nothing about this on the news during the 70s. I was barely aware of it. I didn't know anything about it until I saw the movie Missing in 1982, which really tells the story. I did hear once on NPR that it was difficult in Chile for workers, for working people. That's all, in all that time. So that news was really suppressed during that period, and that goes back to the early and mid and late 70s and early 80s. Another issue, too, I was at a dinner party in Germany, and one of the and a guest was a gentleman who had worked for Radio Free Europe, and he said that Radio Free Europe during the communist period promoted ethnic rivalries, so to speak, or sort of worked to break up some of these communist countries into smaller divisions. That's a different story, but that shows how the U.S. was working abroad in ways that weren't really terribly constructive, I would say. And that's all.
Well, thank you very much, caller. Mickey, Peter, any comments on that?
Well, certainly balkanizing the world is one of the agendas of empire. The more you can have a lack of understanding, conflict inside of nations that you want to control, the stronger that makes the NATO-U.S. forces worldwide. It's primarily about controlling the world, controlling the world's oil, and keeping China away from that oil and slowing down the growth of the Chinese economy. And that's the deep politics agenda for the U.S. and the 1% of the transnational corporate class in the world. This isn't just U.S. corporations. This is European, Japanese as well.
Well, isn't the relationship with China somewhat more complicated? They don't want to slow it down so much that they don't have those workers in those factories, do they?
No, it's not. It's a matter of economic dominance and control, ultimately.
Yeah.
And the U.S. wants to be able to control the oil in the world. And Chinese are buying oil from Iran. And now they're going to start buying oil in their own currencies and not use dollars. And that is undermining the dollar worldwide, which is one of our biggest stories the last couple of years, has been the inevitable collapse of the U.S. dollar and the increase in inflation in the United States. So, you know, and that will hurt working people all over this country in a very big way. And it's deliberate. They know it's going to happen. There's no way. And we've systematically protected the dollar militarily around the world as best we can. And when countries start to say we're not going to use the dollar anymore, then Libya was invaded. Certainly Saddam Hussein was taken out because he had switched to euros. The first thing we did when we got back in there was switch back to dollars. So protecting the dollar worldwide has been a big issue, but that it's not going to be able to go on forever.
Our guests, Peter Phillips and Mickey Huff from Project Censored. Let's go back to the phone lines again. Line 2, Urbana, you're on the air.
Hello. You have heard the stories of Islamic extremists rebelling in Nigeria. But what they don't tell you is who caused this rebellion. It is the few major oil companies, Shell Nigeria, Chevron, a Chinese oil company, who have raped that land. They flare off so much natural gas instead of putting it back into the ground because it's cheaper to flare it off. They cause acid rain. Their pipes rust. One instance, they had a fire that Shell didn't put out for 2 months. So their water's polluted. Their ground is polluted. Their air is polluted. The money goes to the generals and the politicians, and most people make less than a dollar a day. And so you can't blame those people for turning to anyone, because capitalism has been such an abysmal failure in that country.
Okay, Mickey, any comments?
Yeah, the caller obviously doesn't spend time watching a lot of the corporate media because he seems to be able to follow a lot of what's going on. We've covered all of those issues and stories over the last several years. We've covered Chevron in Nigeria. We've covered Shell. We've covered some of the positive movements of change that have gone on to thwart this type of corporate globalization and control of resources, from Bolivia to Ecuador. So, we cover those stories as they come up, and we will continue to do so.
Let's go back to the phone lines right now. Now to line one. St. Joseph, you're on the air with Phillips and Huff of Project Censored.
Yes, thank you very much for this program. I have appreciated watching the Megahertz Worldview channel, which has round-the-clock international news. And it's, I definitely feel more informed watching the international news, but specifically RT has been very interesting. They love poking at the hypocrisy of the American government, and just recently, I guess, they've arranged that they're going to give Julia Assange a talk show, which has gotten some press, but I was just wondering how you felt about that, but I've enjoyed it very much, being able to get the international perspective. But thank you.
Well, thank you very much. And Peter Phillips, I'd like you to address that. And also, since you mentioned WikiLeaks or Julian Assange, talk a little bit about that phenomenon, if you would.
Well, certainly RT, Russia Today, is an excellent a news source. They've actually interviewed us several times. And we find that intriguing that they're willing to look at these independent news sources from all over the world and really bring that forward. Al Jazeera now on Pacifica nationally is a good source for particularly Middle Eastern news, but news worldwide. And so we find that there are independent sources out there available. RT is pretty hard to find. It's on one cable channel. But increasingly people are looking that way as they realize that corporate media today is managed news, it's top-down, and it's what the 1% corporate leaders want to hear. And that so people like the caller are finding these sources and becoming educated around the real issues that are going on in the world. Now, as far as Wikipedia goes, we applaud that. We applaud what's going. We believe in the full transparency of government and information in society. And
WikiLeaks, just to...
Yeah.
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 Yeah, WikiLeaks, not Wikipedia.
Oh, I'm sorry. WikiLeaks. Yeah. I missed.
That's quite all right. Go ahead, Peter Phillips.
We certainly believe that. That's a very important part, that whistleblowers should be free and available to say what's going on inside the world bureaucracies, inside the media, inside the governments worldwide, and to build information so that we can share and have democratic grassroots movements that give us the goals of what Occupy is really trying to achieve today.
You know, one of the issues that is in the sixth-ranked story, in fact, this year in the Project Censored list is Google spying, Mickey Huff. And that sort of gets to the idea, the Internet allows all sorts of extraordinary information, mm-hmm. but it's not necessarily a pristine playing field at the same time. Can you talk a little bit about Google spying? Why that is a censored story, what it is?
Yeah, and well, we're seeing the same thing with Twitter actually going on now, agreeing to censor certain things on the basis of content in certain countries. The Google story from last year was people are likely familiar with the Google Maps and so forth, and when they go around and collect data and so on. What wasn't known is that somehow Google was trapping people's information, getting people's information through Wi-Fi and off servers, and they were collecting it. So when it was found out, and there were meetings in the government, certain agencies would get involved and see, well, what's going on here? Ultimately Google claimed that it was a mistake, which is bizarre, given that if it's a mistake, why wouldn't they dump the data? The second is that the government and government agencies basically said, well, Google knows more about this than us, so maybe they'll just police themselves. They kind of said they were sorry and, they won't do it anymore, which is ridiculous. But this is also the case with Google, that they are actively involved in censorship. They have helped in China to censor information in other parts of the world. The technology does exist to limit it, which is why SOPA, PIPA, ACTA, the rest of these kind of things going through Congress. I mean, given that these companies can do some of these things when they want to, that would further kind of pave the way to make that more commonplace and really close down the Internet. And the Internet has a capital I on it for a reason. It's important. It's a great place for people to really explore and try to get accurate information. The other problem with it, however, is that people have to have media literacy and critical thinking skills in order to discern fact from fiction. But the Internet as a resource is a fabulous technological development, So we need to be ever watchful and vigilant in terms of who's controlling it and to what ends.
I'm Bob McChesney. This is Media Matters and WILAM 580. We've only got about 5 minutes or so left, so let's go back to our phone lines. Line 3, Chicago, thank you for your patience. You're on the air with Phillips and Huff of Project Censored.
Good afternoon.
Hi.
And, I find this very interesting. I have been a reporter, so I'm constantly dismayed at the complete lack of balls in the media. I want to ask if you have covered the candidacy of Ron Paul.
And is there any more to the question, caller, or is that pretty much it?
I just want to say I'm talking about Ron Paul and not just him, because he's so emblematic of how the media treats the so-called fringe candidates, you know, whether it's Nader, whether it's Kucinich, whether it's a Libertarian or whatever. They tell us who we can vote for, and they're, in my view, they're electioneering. They're telling us who's acceptable and who's not. And I just want to know your... if you cover that at all, because even progressives have kind of remarked on how Ron Paul has kind of been like the invisible man in the Republican field, and the media has basically treated him like, you know, the redhead stepchild. So I want to know if you approached that at all or considered it.
Well, thank you very much. You want to take that, Mickey?
Yeah, we certainly talked about that. I mean, we routinely talk. I routinely reference that in lectures and public talks. It likely will end up in the book in the Junk Food News Abuse story as a news abuse, meaning things that we should know about, but the way they're covered is absurd. More and more people know about Ron Paul, but most of the corporate media coverage of Ron Paul is that he's a fringe candidate, he can't win, et cetera. And again, this is not an endorsement of Paul or any other candidate, but we see the same way that corporate media has marginalized people like Ralph Nader, as the caller mentioned. There's a definite interest in the corporate media to help frame the corporate status quo candidate, and anybody that challenges the plutocracy, the corporatocracy, etc., they don't fit the frame, and they off get kicked to the curb.
All right, let's take our final caller now, if we can. Line 1, Champaign County, you're on the air with Phillips and Huff of Project Censored.
Hey, good afternoon. I just wanted to thank you guys for what you're doing and for everybody that does help in your cause. And I've always found it such a hypocrisy when our news and politicians and so forth talk about the censoring of information in China or Iraq and stuff like that, when, you know, don't throw stones when you're in glass houses, you know, because our news is so censored and the information we get here is so censored, most people aren't even aware of it. So thank you very much for what you're doing.
Well, thank you very much for your call. Peter Phillips, we've only got a couple of minutes left, and I wanted to change the discussion just slightly. You, like myself, are an old-timer of sorts, and you've been involved in covering media and involved in politics for decades now. What's your sense of where this country's at in this particular period, how it compares to, say, the 70s or 80s?
Well, we're all encouraged by the Occupy movement. And setting the frame that the 1%, or it's probably 0.1%, that dominate the world economically, that the U.S. military and the NATO are in fact working for to protect the free flow of capital worldwide, is now being addressed, that we're really looking at that in some serious kinds of ways about the inequalities of power and the inequalities of wealth that exist in this country. So that's extremely good. Whether or not, to what extent, that social movement will emerge and become powerful in terms of bringing about social change remains to be seen. But we certainly talk about that. We certainly look at what's happening there. We want to bring the issues forward. We want to expose the 1% in an even greater and stronger way. And so we're busy doing that as best we can.
I see that our time is drawing to a close. I want to thank you, Peter Phillips, for taking time out of your schedule. Mickey Huff, for you taking time out of your schedule to come talk to us about Project Censored and the new book, Censored 2012 Sourcebook for the Media Revolution, just out with Seven Stories Press. Gentlemen, thank you both very much.
Thank you.
And I'm Bob McChesney. I want to thank Kyle Kroha, my engineer, Christina Williams, my producer, for their terrific work. It's been a great day, and I'm looking forward to being back here in 167 hours with Craig Aaron and a Free Press. Until then, everyone, have a great week.
Today's broadcast is made possible with support from Mike Weaver Ballroom Dance. Private instruction for social or competitive dancing, weddings, or other special events. Lessons for singles or couples, beginners or advanced of all ages. Information at 378-4601 or on your web, search at Mike Weaver Ballroom Dance.
The weather this afternoon in central Illinois will be sunny. Highs in the upper 30s with some gusty winds. Tonight, mostly cloudy, light west winds. Monday, partly sunny, highs in the lower 50s. Breezy south winds 15 to 20 miles an hour. WILL 580 AM and 90.9 FM, HD3 Urbana.
From PR.